Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, September 21st. I'm Ray Graff. The autumnal equinox is tomorrow, so it's a perfect time to welcome back News 10 meteorologist Jill Swed. If you have questions about the weather, whether it's the wind chill, the dew points, El Niño, La Niña, bombogenesis, whatever, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. If you have a weather question for Jill Swed, you can also email us voxpop@wamc.org. That's voxpop@wamc.org. But the number again, 800-348-2551. She's been bumped the last two times because of breaking news, and I think she's here today. Jill Swed and your weather calls coming up after the news. Well, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're joined today by meteorologist Jill Swed. Jill is the morning meteorologist at News 10 ABC and Fox 23, and much more than that, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. Jill grew up in Pittsburgh, received a Bachelor of Science degree in meteorology from St. Louis University. She also holds the prestigious Certified Broadcast Meteorologist seal from the American Meteorological Society. Prior to forecasting for the Capital Region, Jill was part of a weather team in Lexington, Kentucky, and also in Clarksburg, West Virginia. You got a question about the weather? This is your time. She was bumped twice in the last 6 months, but she's here. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. Or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. Jill Swed, I thought we would never see each other again.
Ray, it is so good to see you in person.
Wow.
It's been too long.
It has been too long. And I think what happened was there were some hearings and then there were some maybe meltdowns around the world and we missed.
You know, big news. I guess that we can bump the weather for big news.
When the snow starts flying and you can't get out of your driveway, weather is the biggest news.
Of course. That's why I love what I do.
By the way, congratulations on staying awake. Now you're doing another newscast. How did this happen?
Hey, you know what? The weather never sleeps, so. Why not extend my day a little bit longer and spend some time with you and the listeners?
But how could you be so animated? I mean, you've already done the morning news, mm-hmm. right? And then another one, right?
Yeah, so I'm on now from 4:30 until 10. Just last week, we added a new show at 9 a.m. on News 10 ABC with Stephanie Rivas, where it's kind of like a blend of news, a little community aspect, some fun interviews. So it's a lot of fun.
Are you having fun doing that?
It's been great. It's only been a week and a half, but, you know, we've done a lot of great things and lots more to come.
There's plenty of time to be bitter later on, right?
Oh, sure. We can get better every single day.
No, I said bitter.
Oh, bitter? Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I don't need to get better.
I don't believe in that.
Well, you're dealing with radio people here, and most of us are bitter. The number is 800-348-2551 if you have a weather question for meteorologist Jill Swed. We got the equinox tomorrow.
Right.
I thought it was always on the 21st.
You know, it fluctuates between the 21st and 22nd, so set your alarms 9:03 p.m. tomorrow. Autumnal equinox. Officially here.
It's very exciting. And if you had to gaze in your crystal ball, how is the autumn going to be, Jill?
I would say not as pretty as maybe years past, thanks to our dry summer. We could talk about the leaves, too, if people want to. I've kind of learned living here for the past 2 years, expect the unexpected. So the snow will fly earlier than we want it to. The first cold snap will settle in sooner than we want it to. And it may still be 80 degrees in October. So
we need that because heating prices are going to be a little high this year.
Right. I think we can hold off the snow, hold off the chill a little while longer. I'll put in a good word with Mother Nature.
Now, do you want to go in? Should we wait for winter, or do you want to go into your explanation about heating degree days right now?
Let's save that for the winter time. We don't need to think about that. It's almost 80 degrees outside in some spots across the Capital Region today.
Thankfully, it's 40 here in the studio.
Right.
This email from Mike in Rexford: is every lightning bolt necessarily accompanied by thunder? Just recently, I witnessed a large bolt of lightning nearby. Heard no thunder. How can that happen? Is it common? And that's from Mike.
Okay, Mike, great question. Yes. So lightning is what you see first. Thunder is the reaction. So
right.
It's always a little bit delayed because sound travels slower than light does. That's why we see the lightning first, hear the thunder later. So it may have been a very soft rumble of thunder a little farther in the distance, or maybe it was just directly over top of you, very quick spurt of the moment and done.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, we often, and you and I think have talked about this before, you know, when we're little, somebody in school or maybe an aunt or a mom says, okay, you just count the seconds between the bolt and the sound of the thunder and you know how far away the lightning is. True or not true?
That's a good estimation. You know, I mean, obviously as a scientist, I can go into the long drawn out explanation, but yeah, counting the number of seconds that's given how many miles a storm is, a good estimate. And
what is that estimate roughly?
You know, a storm can strike, send out lightning 10 miles from where it actually is. So that's why we always say when you hear thunder, come indoors. So good idea just to always be safe.
All right. Jill Sweat is our guest, News 10 ABC and Fox 23 meteorologist. This email from Tom last January up here in Central Mass. We did not have a January thaw. First time in years. How come? My mother would also always say that the thaw would break the back of winter. And that's from Tom in Central Mass.
You know, last winter was an odd one. It was warm. It wasn't that snowy. And that's part of the reason why, if I can continue on with the droughts talk, too.
Yeah.
That's why we're in a bit of a pickle with the drought as well, because we didn't have a snowpack to really kind of get the soil going in the spring season. So, yeah, last winter was a bit of an obscure one. We also had all those icy sleet events, too, which are my least favorite to forecast.
Yeah. Oh, really? Why? Because
yeah,
you get complaints from
it's
everyone?
It's so difficult because it can just be a matter of a couple of miles things can change, a couple of degrees, and how then the atmosphere is lined up to give the different precipitation types.
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, on certain days, you can literally drive up the hill and the precipitation is different.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you go about that, given the vast area that News 10 and Fox 23 covers?
Yeah, that's it's always a challenge for me in the wintertime because I'm one to make sure that everybody at all the different elevations, you know, we go from the valley floor, which is basically sea level, to the Adirondacks that are 4,000 or 5,000 feet. Now, obviously, a lot of people don't live there, but still, we have several thousand feet of elevation to talk about. So we like to break it down a little bit kind of when it comes to elevation. That's why when you tune into our forecasts, our snow maps aren't nice, pretty little color bands. They're kind of squirrely and wavy and they're fun to draw.
But they only give you 6 or 7 minutes. How do you pull it off?
6 or 7 minutes.
No, am I wrong?
I'm lucky if I get 3 on a busy day.
Well, that's
in
crazy
the morning.
Talk.
I know, right?
But, I mean, in the winter, they give you more,
in
right?
The wintertime, yeah. They're very generous with their time in the morning.
Are they listening? All right.
I hope so.
All right, I love them very much. All right, let's
yes.
go to the phones. 800-348-2551. If you have a question for Jill Swed, we go to Poughkeepsie. And, Glenn, you're on.
Yes, hi. I learned about it in school, but I always forget which one is advection fog and which one is convection fog. The hot air over a warm surface or cold air over a hot however that works.
Yeah,
I'm interested in renewing my understanding.
It's like a meek DLT. All right, what do you got?
Great question, Glenn. Yeah, so usually we see fog developing whenever there is slightly cooler air moving over a warmer ground or also water in some cases. So that's why if you live near a lake, a pond, a river, it's usually a little bit foggier. That's why the valleys here in the capital region, like down even towards Poughkeepsie, usually a little bit fogged in more. So that's convection fog that we're seeing there.
Okay.
Gotcha. So cold air over warm is convection.
Yes.
So what is advection fog?
Advection usually happens whenever we see a change with precipitation coming down. Usually, again, kind of similar setup, but usually that accompanies precipitation.
Aha. Glenn, you want to follow up?
Great. Thank you.
You're
very
welcome. Have a great day.
No, that's helpful.
Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. It's weather today with Jill Swed. We like to do this right around the season time, the change of season. And the last couple times? Yeah.
I know. We've missed out spring and summer.
And I'm waiting for you to get that huge network gig, and then I won't even be able to book you for next year.
I am here to stay here in the Capital Region. I love it here. I am challenged every single day with the forecast. That
all
makes
right.
me happy.
I'm just hoping management listens. Maybe
right?
they give you some more, you know. All right, Allison in Amsterdam, you're on.
Did you say Allison? It cut out for a second.
Yeah, that's you. Hi, you're on.
Hello.
Okay, yes. I live in a very rural area, and a couple of locals have told me it's going to be cold and snowy. And when I asked them how they knew, they said the Farmer's Almanac. And I'm wondering if Jill holds any, how she feels about the Farmer's Almanac.
Okay.
And predictions every year.
Oh, let me get on my soapbox, Allison.
Here we go.
I've been on a soapbox about this for a long, long time, but also I'm a meteorologist. I appreciate what the Farmers Almanac did. And, you know, back in the day before we kind of had the exposure and advantages of technology, yes, the Farmers Almanac was great, especially for the farmers, because they need to know kind of when crops need to turn over, when they're going to be planting, how soon they can then start to do their spring cropping as well. I don't know. I look at it and I kind of like, oh, okay, that's what they say. We'll wait and see. There's not a whole lot of science backing it. I'm a scientist. I like the facts. I like the rationale of science backing things up. So again, I'll look at it. People always ask me questions about it, but
you can't predict it now.
I can't predict it now. I don't know how well the Farmers Almanac people are going to do either.
They have a secret formula.
Well, and that's the other thing. I did a science project when I was in middle
school. Any idea what they based it on?
Well,
have any idea?
That's where I'm going here. So I did a science project when I was in middle school, and I was testing the accuracy of a bunch of different forecasts. And, of course, the Farmers Almanac was one of the things that my advisor suggested I look into. So I did tons and tons of research. I don't know what they use, where they get their information. Now, I couldn't get into the tippy top of the Farmers Almanac people to figure out what they use. So
no, it's like the Trilateral Commission. Yeah, you just can't get in there.
It's a secret society.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
If you have an in, Allison, let me know. I'll definitely do a story. We'll do an expose.
All right, Allison, thanks a lot. We got to take a break here. Jill Sweat is here, meteorologist deluxe from News 10 ABC and Fox 23. And the VoxPop. Let me try it again. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. That's what I meant. We'll be back. All right, Zach, I'm not going to make any sounds until you give me that special sign. Oh, that's the sign. Okay, well, I'm glad we're not on TV like Jill Sweat is. 800-348-2551 is the phone number. We talk weather today here on the eve of the autumnal equinox. Before we get to our next call and the next email, we just talked about the Farmer's Almanac. And I assume, based on your education history and everything else, you've been into weather a long time.
Sixth grade was when I first got interested in the weather.
Okay. When you were a kid, did you, and we've all heard this sort of folk wisdom, well, if the cows are lying down,
right,
it's going to rain.
Uh-huh.
If the birds do this, it's going to do that. And the squirrels go crazy, it's going to be a bad winter. Have you ever looked into any of these sort of folk bits of wisdom?
Another science fair project was all around that as well.
Really?
I think that was with the Farmer's Almanac project as well.
And what'd you find out?
You know, some of them are true. Some of them are, old wives' tales. But there are some good ones, like, red sky in the morning, sailors take warning.
Yep.
I use that one on the air all the time. And obviously, as we're entering fall, getting closer to winter, we kind of notice how the squirrels are acting. And, hey, they might know something.
Okay, I'm glad that's where I was going with this. The squirrels in my backyard are going nuts.
Oh, no.
So what does that mean? We're going to have a bad winter?
I would say so. I mean, if they're getting started early gathering their nuts and their sustenance, I don't want to see my heating bill.
I don't like it. And we were attacked by a big swarm of grackles, too. Does that mean anything?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know that one.
Yeah, I almost spilled my drink out in the backyard.
Yeah,
but it didn't do it. All right, let's go back to our phone lines with Jill Sweat. Dave in Williamstown. Dave, you're on.
Hey, folks. Thanks for taking the call. I was wondering about the National Weather Service and their accuracy sort of around the Albany area. I have the app on my phone. I'm a carpenter, and I kind of constantly look at that. But it just seems like, is it me or is it them or neither, that they can't seem to predict the weather very well, at least out this way anymore, is what I'm going to say.
Yes, sure.
So,
budget cuts.
I mean, they have some big supercomputer that they were bragging on recently that ups their ability to predict, but I don't know if it's just me or if it's them. It's like 2 days out, even sometimes then they don't get it right. So I wondered if you relied heavily on their information when you predict, or do you kind of sit down and do your own thing to predict for your TV station?
That's an excellent question, Dave. I spend about 45 minutes every single morning putting together my own forecast.
Yeah.
Now, the Weather Service, they're great partners. Maybe this is an unknown secret. I don't know. They're the ones that put on the watches and warnings. So we rely on them for issuing those kind of advisories. In the broadcast role, you know, we're there to communicate that information to the public. So we really work very close together. When it comes to their forecast, that's probably the last thing that I look at the end of
really?
My... I just to double check myself to make sure that I'm not missing something, or maybe they put out a forecast discussion every single day. So a very detailed information of, you know, what weather features are coming in, what their modeling is suggesting. I will say the output on their website is maybe a little clunky because it kind of is just a drag and drop, you know, just going into the computer model, sliding that in for the particular location and elevation. And so that's kind of where a little finesse from a human,
right,
a broadcast meteorologist on TV, really comes into play. And so while they are wonderful partners, they're very smart people that work there. Sometimes, yeah, their forecast can be a little clunky, and especially when we're looking a couple days in advance, maybe there need to be some finer tweaks. But
yeah,
I don't want to put anything against them because, again, they do wonderful work. They're great partners. Yeah.
And they're listening.
I'm being just a little bit grumpy, though. I know. I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
No, that's okay. I totally get that.
Go ahead,
yeah,
Dave.
But I do rely on it really heavily. So, and speaking of science, men of science and the almanac, was Benjamin Franklin who started the almanac.
That's
true?
Right. That is true. Yes, he was a big part of that. And Thomas Jefferson was a big weather observer as well. So, we have to thank our founding fathers for a lot of the things we have here in this country weather-wise.
Well, Dave, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. The number here is 800-348-2551. And we are talking weather with Jill Swed, meteorologist at News 10 ABC and Fox 23. The email address is voxpopwamc.org. So when you're making your newscast or your weathercast together in the morning, 45 minutes, an hour, something like that, the last thing you do is check the National Weather Service and see where they're at.
Yeah.
What do you do before that? What other models are you using?
Yeah, so we have four main models that we look at. There's two that come in that the United States puts out. There's one that comes from Europe and another one in Canada.
Mm.
And so kind of depending on the weather situation, I kind of look a little more at others as opposed to maybe some.
What's your go-to? Is the European model still the thing?
I mean, the European model predicted Sandy's turn. You may remember that
from remember
a number of years
well.
Ago.
Yep.
Yeah, so that one's really important. For wintertime forecasting, the Canadians kind of know what's up.
Yep.
So I'll look at them a lot. But kind of like big picture stuff, you know, our American models are great. Kind of just to give us an idea of what's coming down the road, 7-10 days, because it does go out the longest of the kind of the easy access models that we have.
What happens if one model, and we saw this with Hurricane Sandy and others, differs widely from somebody else's?
Well, right. And that's the kind of where, as a meteorologist, you're like, well, do I kind of side with the ones that are all lumping together? But I also can't rule out this outlier because what if that's the right one?
Yeah.
And that's kind of always a struggle when it comes to tropical forecasting, winter weather too. You know, each model can say something different. And, you know, you have to use your knowledge and your kind of best, I don't want to say guess, because it's not a guess.
It's an art to
but
some extent.
It is an art to forecasting based on your education, so the science background, but also your experience as well and kind of what you've seen in the past with similar storms.
And one last question based on David's call. And he was complaining that, you know, a couple days out, National Weather Service to him is not as accurate as he would like. How far out do you feel comfortable? How many days?
I'm solid day 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
You know, maybe, you know, within a couple of degrees for the high, low temperature by day 3. By day 5, I have a pretty good picture of what's coming. Maybe timing needs to be nailed down. And day 6 and 7.
Spin the wheel?
I don't want to say spin the wheel, but like my confidence is not as high as in some of the earlier days. So
and does management say, listen, Jill, we need 8 days out of you?
You know, we are the most accurate forecast in the capital region at News 10 ABC. And so people come to us knowing that we are going to be the most accurate. We give 7. We've been toying with doing a 10-day News 10. so, you know, we'll see.
Okay. You know what? You are such a pro. You will never get caught in my trap of trying to diss your management.
I know the drill.
Fair enough. All right. This email from Janet. Not much to it, except what about heat lightning? No thunder?
Yeah. So heat lightning is kind of one of those.
It's a myth,
it's
right?
It's a myth. Yeah. So there always is going to be thunder with lightning. It's oftentimes with so-called heat lightning, that the thunderstorm is way off in the distance and you're too far away to actually hear the thunder. But okay. You see the lightning, yeah.
All right, let's do one more email, then we'll hit the phones again. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551 if you have a question for meteorologist Jill Swed. This is from David. David says, I'd like to understand the interplay between the dew point and relative humidity. For example, don't get too excited
yet. I love this question.
How does 90% relative humidity with a 50-degree dew point feel compared to 70% relative humidity with a 70-degree dew point? Also, it often seems the low temperature corresponds to the dew point. Unrelated, there's more.
There's more.
Well, let's do this one first, and then okay. We'll get to the second part.
Yeah, so I love this question because everybody kind of is familiar with relative humidity because it's in percentage and it's a little easier to digest. The dew point is kind of a little bit of a harder variable, but actually is the more important one to focus on.
Really?
Yes. So relative humidity tells us the point of saturation. So that's whenever the air is cooled, at what point we're going to see condensation, we could see dew, we can see fog, whatnot. The relative humidity is actually calculated when it comes to the temperature and the dew point. You're dividing that percent of saturation.
Right.
So I like dew point a lot because it tells us a good indicator of how moist the air is. Now, you kind of have to think of it on a scale. So during the summer, oh boy, was it hot. It was humid too. We had a lot of dew points in the 70s. That's downright tropical, especially for this area.
Yeah.
The lower the number, the drier the air, the higher it is, the more moisture the air can hold, the more humid it could feel. So even on a cold winter's day, we could see a dew point in the 30s. The air temperature is also in the 30s. We have 100% humidity, but doesn't feel humid just because it's all relative.
Ah, okay. But as far as predicting the day's weather, how does that help you?
Yes. So the dew point kind of gives us a threshold of how low the temperature will go. The air temperature will never drop below the dew point. So especially on a clear, calm night, whenever I'm putting my forecast together for overnight lows, I'm looking at the dew point because that kind of tells me the basement for where the temperatures will go. It will never drop below that point. It may be a couple degrees above. It may match it, but it will never drop below.
We did have, and you mentioned this just now, a very hot summer. Weeks of just very, very warm weather. Have you had a chance to look at the summer numbers and put them in perspective?
Yeah, we were in the top five. I don't recall exactly what place we were in, but near the top five, one of the hottest we've seen. It was over 20 days in the 90s,
yeah.
Like seven that were 95 plus, which is crazy. And it was also very dry, too. And that kind of goes hand in hand, too, just given the setup that we had. It's almost like it just wanted to stay hot, stay dry. And we just needed a big break to bust that bubble.
Jill Swed is our guest today, meteorologist from News 10 ABC and Fox 23, which I did not realize. All of those broadcasts are done in one spot now.
Yes, I never...
Has that always been that way? Fox is 40 years old.
Fox is 40 years old. We're going on 70 years with News 10. It was in the early 2000s that there was the merger. I don't recall the exact year. Whenever Fox 23 came over to News 10. So we've been in the same building ever since. My history is a little rusty.
Oh, you don't know the history of all the weather people?
I know, right?
Howard Tupper, hello, small fry. Hi, small fry.
I know some big names, but yeah. I need to go back to history school of the Capital Region.
Or you really don't. the second part of David's question. Unrelated, I often hear the daily high-low temperatures are in Death Valley, California, and Petersink, Utah. They're less than 700 miles apart. I wonder about the weather in the middle of these extremes.
Huh. That's a great question.
That might be tough for you to research.
Yeah, I know. I've never lived out west. The farthest I've ever lived was St. Louis. So I'm not as familiar and well-versed in the topography out west, but obviously Death Valley is in a valley.
Yeah.
I would assume that location in Utah is towards the top of the mountains. So again, yeah, things can greatly change, kind of similar to here, just on maybe a slightly smaller scale.
Interesting. The variations? And I asked you this before. Have you found it? Is it getting easier or was it always easy to kind of predict the crazy weather we get around here?
So I've always lived in a place that's been a little bit flatter than here. That it doesn't sharply rise about 1,000 feet from one location to another, especially from major city to kind of some outlying spots. So that was probably my biggest challenge whenever I moved here, of kind of getting a grip of the topography along with the geography.
And so aside from going higher in altitude and having generally cooler temperatures, mountains affect wind currents and things.
Wind,
and so
wind temperature, everything. So you really have to think about it. And it's even, you know, some of the shadow, we always talk about this when we're doing winter forecasting, the way the wind is coming can also then create shadows from one mountaintop to the next. And so, again, that's why our snow maps sometimes have squiggly lines on it, and it doesn't look straightforward.
I'll tell you, I don't know what the winter is going to be, but in my gut, I think it's going to be a bad one.
It's going to be a winter in the Northeast. I mean, we'll have snow, we'll have cold, there may be some ice along the way, and more of the same for about 4 or 5 months.
You're entirely too perky about that answer. This one's from Corey in Manchester, Connecticut. And by the way, Jill Sweat is our guest, 800-348-2551. Jill is a meteorologist and works round the clock at News 10 ABC and Fox 23. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. If you have a question, the phone number, 800-348-2551. Corey in Manchester, Connecticut writes, why are experts of weather called meteorologists? Do they study meteors? And that's from Corey.
Yeah, I do not study meteors, although in the realm of the news business, the meteorologist is the station scientist. So I have to know a little bit about a lot of science, or be willing to be able to explain about science all the time.
And so to the anchors.
To the anchors sometimes. No, I am fortunate that I do work with some folks that also enjoy
really?
Science.
So it's not like Mr. Burgundy. This is the weather forecast.
Right. No. We don't have one of those.
All right.
But anyway, so we're kind of all dealing with a lot of different things. And the root of meteorology kind of comes back to just talking about things coming from the sky, and the Greek and the Latin. I don't know the exact translation, but
all right, fair enough.
Yeah.
That's a good answer. We'll hold you to that.
Okay.
Let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551. We're having just a little lag on our screen.
Okay.
I see we have a call on the phone, but we're not quite there yet
on
the screen.
This is called a pause, and we stretch and we stretch
some
more.
Vamp until ready.
Exactly, yes.
Well, you came in here on an interesting technological day. The gremlins have been at work here in Studio A.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, the lights went out on the on-air. My computer went out yesterday, and...
That's the other thing I have to do. I have to be my own tech support. Do you have somebody here that can help you with that?
I'm looking
You're
over
looking
Zach,
at the
engineer,
other room.
So I'm not sure. Okay, yes, we'll say yes.
Yes, fantastic.
The number here is 800-348-2551. And let's go, I think we can do this now. Let's go to Beth. Beth, where are you calling from? Hello?
I'm calling from the Adirondacks, from the town of Day.
Oh, yes.
Oh, wonderful.
Hello.
Yeah, and my question for Jill is the global climate destabilization making it harder to predict the weather?
Oh, well, yeah, there are a lot more extremes that come with our ever-changing climate. Obviously, you know, we were very dry across this part of the country. Meanwhile, parts of California were dealing with monsoon rain. Also, there's the drought and the wildfires. And so I think the weather is becoming more extreme. And that certainly is something that the models need to catch up on. We've been seeing from year to year, every 10 to 30 years that our average temperatures are warming too. And so that goes into the weather models that we look at when we put our forecasts together. So there is a little bit of catch up that needs to happen with that. The models like to look back to what they know, what has happened historically in the past.
Far is that? How far back?
We have records that go back into the 1700s for the U.S., but reliable, kind of constrained together, you know, consistently, probably some point in the 1800s for most of the East Coast, obviously a little bit later out West as things were getting settled. But so the models, again, kind of look to go back to what they know, what historically has happened. Have we had a storm like Superstorm Sandy? No. Have we had a storm like Katrina? No. I know I keep going back to hurricanes, but they're an easy example to explain. Have we ever seen temperatures this hot in some cases? No. And so, again, that kind of comes down to the meteorologists whenever they put the forecast together, that our knowledge and our education kind of comes into play, too. So if we just went straight by the book, straight by what the model said, then yes, we'd be having a harder time.
And hey, Beth, I do want to let you know our regular session with Dan DeLury on climate change is next week. I think it is a week from today. So tune in for that one and give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. We're joined by Jill Swed, News 10 ABC and Fox 23 meteorologist. And before we get to our, well...
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Okay, so we said goodbye to Beth, but Beth is still on the screen.
She's still on the line.
So let's just hit a button and see what happens.
Okay.
Gary, hello.
Hi. How are you guys?
Good. You're on.
Hi, Gary.
Great. My question had to do with when I watch TV, I see that they have a European model and American model to kind of predict what's going to happen with a storm and the intensity, and usually it has a lot to do with how much snow we're going to get in the winter. And I wondered if you could maybe speak to what is really the difference between those two models.
Yes, yeah, so those
and,
are...
I'm going to turn off so I can listen.
Okay.
Thanks, Gary.
Thank you for the question. Yeah, those are kind of the two biggies, especially when it comes to long-term weather forecasting.
Yeah.
The American model, obviously coming from this country, we use a certain set of parameters. It's kind of skewed to be a certain way, has certain bias. The European has their own set of variables, its own bias.
Now, when you say the variables, are you what exactly are we speaking of here?
So obviously it's going to predict temperature, moisture content, dew point, air pressure, wind, all of that. There are also some other variables that come into play as well for severe weather, for winter forecasting and whatnot. Again, there's kind of more of a tipping the scales to certain aspects with each model. And then it all comes down to some very, very smart meteorologists who are very good computer programmers that tell these supercomputers how to do that. And there have been tweaks along the way, kind of back to our last caller's question about, you know, our ever-changing climate and adding that to the forecasting as well. So again, it's just different variables. Obviously, also the scope of the model, what it can predict, is also different too. We have a global American, we have a global European model, but again, they're kind of all a little different. And also then there's the Canadian that we can throw into the mix as
which
well.
Which is 15% less.
Okay.
No, it's an exchange rate.
Yes,
joke.
Right.
It's all right, fine.
Never mind.
We'll just move on. But what exactly, they talked about upgrading the computers on the American side, and they crunch a lot of numbers.
Yes.
If we had an ultimate computer that could crunch every number possible, and we put in more data, could you predict exactly, or are there still things that we don't know why they happen?
It all comes down to the art of forecasting, too, I think. You know, we can have, and I even think about this whenever I'm putting a severe weather day's forecast together, I'm putting a winter forecast together. Sometime I can just be overloaded and bombarded with data. I can look at every single thing, but I don't feel any better about my forecast from whenever I was just looking at what I normally look at.
Right.
So sometimes too much data is too much data, but sometimes it's also very helpful too, and it's nice to have.
You know what? That's profound. We're joined today by Jill Swed, meteorologist at News 10 ABC and Fox 23. The number is 800-348-2551. And the email is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Oh, we're on. He gave me the signal again. 800-348-2551. I think he likes that signal a little too much.
Oh, boy.
Jill Swed is our guest. We talk weather on Vox Pop today. We'll take care of a couple of emails here before we go back to the phones. This one's from Mary, who says, thanks to Jill for her great energy and clear communication about this science.
Oh, that was so kind.
All right, now let's see. Maybe the shoe's about to drop
okay,
here.
Okay, all right. I'm on the edge of my seat.
At what rate are predictions updated for the chance of rain, for example, every hour?
They can be. We do an hour-by-hour forecast on News 10 ABC every morning that talks about, hour-by-hour rainfall chances, temperatures. Usually we kind of give a broad stroke of, you know, what the day's forecast is going to be. We don't usually use percentages because, again, that kind of can be opened up for interpretation of what 50% chance of rain means. So we like to use words like isolated, scattered, likely, widespread.
Right.
That's a little more easy to understand and digest.
All right, that's fair enough. And also vague enough that you can't be that wrong.
Well, a scatter can mean just about anything, can't it?
Yeah. Oh, there's one over in Kansas. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Mary goes on, when Google Weather asks me, is it raining where you are now? Where does that information go? Does it inform the prediction models that Jill and others use?
I'm not sure where Google's information goes. I don't know. I'm not familiar with where they get their forecasting from. But then again, Google is very smart, so I'm sure it's going up into the cloud and someone's ingesting it, but I don't trust
Farmer's
it.
Almanac.
Farmer's Almanac, there
That's
you go.
That's the secret formula.
Good callback.
This one's from Peter in Barryville. Speaking of Farmer's Almanac, Benjamin Franklin did not invent the Farmer's Almanac.
Oh.
Despite what David the caller said, there were a number of almanacs around during the colonial era, but Franklin was the publisher of Poor Richard's Almanac, made popular with its pithy expressions and maxims.
Oh, okay. I am familiar with Poor Richard's, but I learned something new
All
today.
Right, fair enough, and thank you for that one,
Yes, always
Peter.
Learning.
This one's from Susanna in Bern. We live in Bern, okay,
yes.
And our activities are depending on the weather.
Mm-hmm.
So we check the radar all the time. We noticed that lately the radar is saying one thing, no rain, but the reality was another, rain. How much can we rely on radar?
You know what? It all comes down to where you live. The radar site in Albany is actually in Bern. So,
no way.
Yes, it is. Again, it all comes down to elevation, being able to see all around the capital region, but also getting the valley floor. So it is sitting, the radar site is in Bern. So if they, whenever she looks at the radar, there's probably this little donut right over where she lives. That's because the radar is not seeing that low to the ground right there.
So they're making it up.
So, well, it just can't see that. It's kind of like if you would stand on a stool really high up and you kind of try and look down, you can't see too, you know, straight down,
yeah.
But you can see kind of all around you. It's kind of like that.
Okay.
With the radar. Yeah.
When you do radar modeling, you have one in Bern. I presume you have one at the airport and other places. Do you have a computer model that takes that and then crunches it into a three-dimensional look?
Yeah, so there's radar sites all over the country. So our local one, again, is in Bern, and there's one that's going to be out towards the Tug Hill Plateau. There's one in Western New York. There's some PA, obviously, downstate, Long Island, whatnot. But yes, the National Weather Service, again, a little nod to them. They do a great job, and they can kind of blend all of those small localized models, radars together to give us a nice, pretty picture to see where the rain is and where the snow is moving across the country.
It's fun. I mean, there are certain people in the newsroom who have the radar app all the time on. And, you know, it gets a little annoying after a while, but it's fun.
They sound like my kind of people.
I bet they do. This one's from Mitchell in Schenectady. Hey, what's the difference for us in this region this winter for El Nino or El Nino? It should be La Nina and El Nino. Which one is it this year? And do you know when they shift? Is it fast or gradual? And that's
so
from Mitch.
I believe you're heading into our third straight La Nina winter. So that usually means it's going to be a little bit wetter.
Yeah.
Possibly slightly milder. Again, that kind of fluctuates.
They said that last year.
We did not get much snow. Again, it's a kind of a good, these long-term climate models are kind of a good indicator to paint the picture with broad strokes. Again, it's kind of something that we look at, we don't fully rely on. It kind of gives us a good idea of maybe something to keep in the back of our heads. But again, it kind of comes down to day by day, week by week, what's going to happen.
Oh, that's interesting. So you bear it in mind, and it is, as you say, in the back of your head, but does it inform what you do in those 45 minutes to an hour when you're making your forecast?
Not day to day, but whenever I look kind of down the road, like what's going to happen within the next week, because I always am like kind of looking down the road to see what's going to happen a week, 10 days from now. I know it's going to change, but kind of getting an idea of how fast the storms may be moving, how active the storm track may be, that also comes down to if we're entering a El Nino or La Nina season as well.
Jill Swed joins us today, meteorologist at News 10 ABC and Fox 23. Any more air shifts today for you, or is this it?
This will be it today. I'll be back on the air, though, at 4:30 tomorrow morning.
Oh, God, that hurts. All right, let's go back to the phones. And Carol in Pittsfield. Carol, you're on.
Hi. I have a friend. Great show. I have a friend who insists she can tell it's going to rain because it's very humid out. What are the conditions that cause it to rain?
So usually whenever we have rain, the air is incredibly saturated, meaning the temperature and the dew point are quite close together. This is kind of a basic understanding or a basic explanation for it, but I like to think of clouds just being weighted down. They're carrying like too much change in their pockets and like they just need to let some go. Well, the change are raindrops, obviously. And so the pockets, the clouds is getting too heavy. It needs to let something go. It's at saturation. So humidity humidity levels are high, likely at 100%. Not necessarily. Doesn't have to be 100% relative humidity for it to rain. But usually it does, you know, whenever you step outside, especially in the summertime, if it kind of feels really humid instantly, you can kind of almost sense that it's going to rain almost very soon after that.
Well, Carol, thank you very much for the call. And now let's go to Tom, who is in an undisclosed location. Ooh. Tom, where are you calling from?
Oh, no, I'm calling from Gardner.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, I have an answer to your question, Ray, about predicting weather, and then I have a question about a rainbow.
Fair enough.
As far as predicting weather, there are just too many variables that are interconnected, and we can't accumulate them all and put them all in place and see what's going to happen. And so that's why the farther out in time you go, the wider range of tolerances.
There's a lot of things that can change the farther out you go in time. Yes,
right,
for sure.
Right. And also the smaller scale you go. For example, we had a thunderstorm. Well, I heard a gust coming. There was no tornado, I know, but the gust sounded just like a jet flying 10 feet above the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you get to a smaller scale, it's even harder to predict. Like a gust like that, you know, I mean, a mile down the road, they didn't have it.
Right, exactly. That's
okay.
I get that question a lot.
Yeah. So my question, it may have been that storm or a different one, but I said, oh, wait a minute. If I turn around, there's going to be a rainbow there.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, well, there it was. And there was a secondary rainbow as well. The primary rainbow, let's see, the colors on the inside of the curve are the blue and the purple.
Right.
It had an extra band of blue and purple after the regular blue and purple.
Can that be?
Interesting. I wonder if...
I don't understand why. I just know what I saw.
Yeah, right. I know. I'm trying to think. So whenever we get a double rainbow, obviously that's going to be reflected because that's just the way the water droplets are. So it's the reverse. So I wonder if there's almost maybe a tertiary rainbow as well.
Oh, yeah,
really,
maybe
there was like kind of like this prism effect going on with the water droplets. I've never seen that happen before, but that's kind of just where my mind's going with some of these optics that happen.
Well, then everyone look at rainbows because they're more interesting than you think.
That's
and
very
I'll just
true.
Throw this out to everyone. Like this summer, the skies and the clouds have been kind of weird and or different from me anyway. And I'm looking up and I see a part of a rainbow just flashed into being for about 3 seconds, and then it goes as the clouds are moving.
Huh.
It was incredible.
Yeah. It's always fun. It's always fun to catch those little things in the sky from time to time.
So looking up when the sky is interesting, you'll see a lot of cool stuff.
That is so true, Tom.
And do the same thing, so we're one and the same.
Hey, why don't you call in tomorrow during the astronomy show? That's fun to look up at night, too.
Oh, I'm there.
All right,
man.
Hey, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551. Jill Swed joins us today. And let's go to Latham. Robert, you're on.
Hi. I got a question on how much varied the local meteorologists vary from the computer models and the artificial intelligence that they that the computer models predict on local weather and their forecasts and everything else. I'm just wondering how much they vary from what the computer models tell them what's going to happen.
So AI computer models are a great tool. They're something that are, you know, one of the things that I use to put my forecast together, but I don't rely on it. I don't necessarily keep score to be like, oh, I was better than this model today, because I don't want to put the model down. Because, again, it's a great working tool that I utilize. But, again, it's kind of just a tool. It's a guidance. It's model guidance, as we say.
Right.
And so it's not necessarily ground gospel truth. It's just a kind of a good indicator to kind of steer me one direction to another. Again, with more information comes more information and just, you know, more things to look at, more things that can maybe sway a meteorologist. That's something in my young career I needed to learn, that, you know, some things I can maybe, you know, certain times of the year, I don't need to look at that particular variable, that particular information. Just kind of, you know, working harder and smarter in different ways.
Hey, Robert, thanks for the call. We're joined today by Jill Swed from News 10 ABC at Fox 23. She'll be done here shortly, and we'll get 1 hour sleep and then go back to work. Tom in Kingston. Tom, you're on.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Good. How are you, Tom?
Great. Listen, a previous caller mentioned that they have a friend that. I also have a friend that lost half a finger in a saw accident, and every winter he can tell you how bad a snowstorm's going to be by the color of his finger.
Oh, come on. The color of his finger.
We just
look at his finger. It goes various shades of pink to purple if it's a bad storm, and every time it's right. Do you give that any credence?
No, I will say that, you know, people who suffer from migraines can often tell when it's going to rain, when it's going to storm with the change in atmospheric pressure.
Yeah, that's true.
So there must be something related to the pressure and the circulation going into his
finger.
That
is bizarre, Tom.
I have never heard that before. I'll keep that in mind, but I don't want a picture though next time it snows.
Maybe, you know what? When you're doing the forecast on News 10, you get a picture of the guy's finger. You pop it up on the screen.
Put that on the air.
It's pink. We're going to have snow tonight, kids.
I think that's a fun...
And I cut to the point. When they said there's a bad storm coming, I would just call him up and say, what color is your finger? He texted me back a picture of it, like half pink and half purple, and I know it's going to be bad.
Well, that's a great anecdote. That's great.
Yeah, I wonder if Jerry Garcia could have told it to the weather as well. Hey, Tom, that's a weird one, and thank you for that. I know this. Mm-hmm. I hurt my elbow decades ago,
uh-huh.
and for years, when it was going to rain, it hurt like a son of a gun.
Uh-huh. Yeah, pressure was dropping. Yeah, a little stiffness.
Yeah. By the way, Jimmy writes, don't know if you covered this. Today is not the first day of fall.
That's
actually
correct.
It's tomorrow. You and I got that right.
That is correct. Friday is the first full day of fall as well.
Okay, and that's right. The equinox is at 9:03 tomorrow.
9:03 p.m.
All right. Let's see. I don't know. Is this working over here? Zach, the engineer, give me a sign if it's working. Ah, okay.
Okay.
All right. All right. Well, there you go. Let's go.
Fun.
Let's go to the phones now. Joe in Northwest Connecticut. Joe, you're on.
Yeah, I'd like to know how far above sea level Northwest Connecticut is.
That's not really in your area.
It all comes down to
sea level.
Okay.
Where you are in Northwest Connecticut, so that can vary greatly.
Right. And do you guys get into Northwest Connecticut?
We do not. We do Western Massachusetts, Southern Vermont, but unfortunately we don't come down and see you in Connecticut.
You see, we do get into Northwest Connecticut.
Yes, that's
here
wonderful.
Northeast Public Radio. I want to say it's about 12 feet, Joe. No, I have no idea.
12 feet?
No,
you're a little higher up than that.
I'm just making stuff up. Hey, thanks for the call. We appreciate it very much. Jill Swed, now it's time. We do this at the end of every program. Your prediction, unscientific.
Oh.
Jill Swed's gut prediction, rough winter.
There will be snow. There will be bitterly cold days.
That is such a cop-out.
I know. I don't know. I have a hard time doing a seasonal forecast. Not that I don't want people to be like, oh, but you said. It's just there's so much room for things to change.
Yeah.
You know, we started off pretty snowy last winter, and then look how we ended up.
And then what happened was I bought an expensive snowblower with my neighbor. We teamed up.
Yeah.
And then there was almost no snow.
Well, maybe this winter you can get out there and use it.
Well, I don't know. It probably won't work this year.
Oh, no.
It sat around. You know, I just thought of this. Do your producers and management, do they have a little scorecard and say, Jill was pretty good this week, Jill was not so good this week, as far as her predictions?
I don't know that they do. I've never been pulled into an office and said, hey, Jill.
You were only 50%
right
on this one.
You were only 50% right this
week. But
they don't
do that.
No, I'm probably harder on myself than my bosses would be.
All right. So before we wrap up here with Jill Swed, you're on News 10 ABC, you're on Fox 23. Mm-hmm. What website does one go to get this amalgamation?
Yeah, so news10.com, great resource there. You can also download the free Storm Tracker weather app. You will get my actual forecast on that app, not just
video
some,
of that. Or?
There will be a video. There's also a numeric output of the hour by hour temperature, rain chances that I put in every single morning, and my colleagues do again
what?
In the evening.
You don't have interns?
No, but I would want to do that myself.
Yeah,
I wouldn't. give them that grunt work.
Well, Jill Swed, you are fantastic, and barring any, you know, hearings
right,
or
you never
World
know
War
what's
going
to happen.
We'll have you back, all right?
Thank you so much. This was fun today.
Support and get that hour sleep. You'll
okay,
need it.
Okay, thank you.
Support comes from the Center at Eagle Hill, Hardwick, Massachusetts, presents Scott Higgins Comedy All-Stars Saturday, September 24th at 7 p.m. The Center at EagleHill.org for tickets and more information. Empire State English, licensed to teach English as a second language to visiting college students. New classes this fall, online and in person, esenglish.org. And the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, protecting the forests, wetlands, shorelines, and ridges that protect Lake George permanently. Projects, events, and news at lglc.org. Once again, thanks to Jill Swed for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. I saw what you did in there. I saw that sign that you gave us. And believe me, management's going to hear about it. Thanks to Andrea Cunliffe for answering the phones. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, as I mentioned, we'll talk astronomy with Dr. Valerie Rapson and Bob Berman. That's tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for 51%.